Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. In a single year, according to the American Heart Association, nearly 500,000 Americans die from cardiac arrest. And globally, cardiac arrest claims more lives than some of the headline forms of illness or death that we hear about, forms of cancer, the flu, auto accidents, HIV, firearms, and other causes combined. We're used to seeing depictions on TV and film of bystanders stepping out of a crowd and saving someone's life using CPR. That's our topic today, bystander CPR. That's CPR performed by laypersons, not members of the Emergency Response Network. We want to explore the realities of CPR, and here to do that is an expert on the subject, someone who's performed it many times and has taught classes in it as well, Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, good to see you again.
Thank you. Hello to you and our listeners.
So that we're all on the same page about this, I alluded to this a moment ago. We see it depicted on film and in television, but I can tell you right now, I wouldn't know just from watching it how to do it. Can you say some more about CPR, just so we know where we're beginning the discussion?
Yeah, let's all be on the same page. CPR is an emergency procedure. Classically, CPR combines chest compressions, which are employed to restore spontaneous blood circulation, getting blood moving around in the body, and it's combined with breathing in a person who suffered a sudden cardiac arrest. With CPR, what we're trying to do, most commonly, we're trying to avoid brain damage. Of the two, compressions and ventilation, which are the classic two components of CPR, it's now recognized that early, high-quality chest compressions are most important.
So the depiction we see of breathing into somebody's mouth is now kind of outdated?
It's not outdated, but when we talk about bystander CPR, we now know that hands-only CPR is an option and the outcomes are almost as good.
You mentioned that CPR is done until other, maybe more substantive measures can be taken by health professionals to restore circulation and breathing. What are some of those other measures?
Okay, it's important for people to understand that CPR alone is unlikely to restart the heart. So CPR is a transition strategy until we can employ those strategies to restart the heart. Generally, Brandon, restarting the heart requires defibrillation. You might wonder, so what is that? Tell me what that is. Well, it entails shocking the heart to restore normal electric rhythm of the heart. Defibrillation is not effective for all dysfunctional heart rhythms. When someone is what we call flatline, you see it on TV all the time, a straight line on the EKG machine, that means there's no electrical activity. And commonly, defibrillation will not work when someone is flatline.
And I should point out that typically when we say defibrillation, you're talking about those paddles and somebody yells clear and jump back and you're applying those to the chest and that's an electrical shock going into the chest.
Right. Again, let's put this in context. Yeah, we call those automatic external defibrillators and we use AED machines. We have in place various places in the community.
They've become more common in schools and offices. Yeah,
they have. And so we're using CPR to bridge until that can be used to hopefully restore the heart. Learning about defibrillation is really important. The two go together, and CPR is what you start with. So as community people, we want to identify that someone's had a cardiac arrest. We want to call 911 first, always first, and then begin to do CPR.
Earlier in the conversation, you alluded to changes in the way we think about CPR, kind of an old way to do it, new way to do it. There is a new and improved kind of CPR, I gather?
There's a new way to do CPR, and it's called bystander CPR or hands-only CPR. The premise behind bystander CPR is what we've already talked about, that it's most important to pump blood to the brain, which is what the compressions do, than to oxygenate the blood, which is the purpose of ventilation. And that's what caused a lot of people trouble, either trying to do the two together or some reticence about doing the ventilations. So compressions only work because there is residual oxygen in the blood. So research has shown that it's easier to teach people to do hands-only CPR. They're more likely to want to do it. And the results are almost equivalent of CPR with compressions and ventilation.
So you've already kind of indicated to us that this newer form, this bystander CPR, can make a difference. Could you put that into numbers for us?
Absolutely. More than 350,000 of the cardiac arrest that we have each year occur outside of the hospital. 90% of the people who suffer a cardiac arrest outside the hospital die. We do need to deal with that. So we're talking about the 10% that we have the opportunity, and perhaps we can nibble into that 90% number. When CPR is performed, 45% of the out-of-hospital cardiac victims survive.
Mm.
So there's the compelling reason for bystander CPR. You give people that chance. So someone might ask, well, so what? I survive. Is it a good survival? Well, actually, the prognosis is good for those who survive CPR and are discharged from the hospital. So I added that second qualifier. Those folks who survive CPR and are discharged from the hospital usually don't have brain damage, which is one of the big concerns that people have. So CPR can increase a person's chance of survival 2 or 3-fold. That's pretty good odds, Brandon, especially when the CPR is administered properly.
How long should one perform CPR? You were talking about this being a bridge. Do you just do it indefinitely until emergency personnel arrive? Is there an ideal amount of time? Explain that for us.
Okay. Good question. The best chances of survival are when an automatic external defibrillator is used, what we call an AED, to restart the heart. So we want to do CPR early and properly so we can get to the point where we can do defibrillation. So the answer then to your question is we should be doing CPR until the return of spontaneous circulation, which is almost always as a result of defibrillation or the person is declared dead by a medical personnel.
How concerned should we be about harm that might be caused by bystander or maybe even in-hospital CPR? Again, we're talking about people who are not trained medical professionals going in and pressing on somebody's sternum on the breastbone and making those chest compressions. How concerned should we be about somebody with good intentions maybe causing some harm?
I'm sure that's a question on the mind of lots of our listeners based on research. We need to put things in perspective, Brandon. The benefits of bystander CPR far outweigh the risk. That's the mantra. The benefits far outweigh the risk. CPR is a last resort intervention. A person who is not breathing and does not have an effective heartbeat will surely die without CPR. When you consider that most sudden cardiac arrests occur outside the hospital and most are in homes, the people who might need bystander CPR could be your family member or someone close to you. There are certain things about CPR to put this in perspective, as I said, that I think we should mention. One is the benefits far outweigh the risk. I'm going to begin and end with that.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly is there are now new interventions that are being employed and are promising that when used in conjunction with CPR and defibrillation can actually increase survivability after that. And that's things like cooling the body. Then the other thing is a bystander or healthcare professional may not be able to save a life of a person who suffers sudden cardiac arrest, but you may save the life if the CPR helps to preserve the organs for donation. So I think there's more compelling reasons why to do CPR that, in my perspective, outweigh the concerns about the risk of CPR. Because remember, without CPR, the person is almost certainly dead.
All right, parting words for our listeners. What do you want to leave folks with today?
Only about 1/2 of Americans say they would perform CPR in recent surveys. And you might ask why. Well, they don't know how to perform CPR. That's easily remedied. They fear legal ramifications or hurting someone. And we are pretty well protected in Tennessee when we administer CPR with good intentions. And then lastly, they think someone else will step up and perform CPR. That's not as likely as you would think. So my response to our listeners, Brandon, is to take a CPR course, especially now that bystander CPR is in use and courses are taught in our community. Our local American Heart Association offers instructor-led bystander CPR courses as well as online. The American Red Cross also does these things, and many of the courses that teach you CPR also give you the instructions that you need about using those AED machines that we see placed within the community, which again increases survivability.
Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, thanks again for another interesting conversation on Health Connections.
My pleasure. I hope everyone will at least look up bystander CPR and that many will take courses